That's right. It's a continuation of the I Love Ann show. I'm Ann Eller, and I have Congressman Jeff Duncan on the line with us. How you doing today, Jeff?
Ann, I'm doing great. Headed up toward Clemson for a field hearing with Senator Tim Scott, and then spend some days, sometime today up in Oconee County. So just continuing the in-district work period in the district, and I think we've touched just about every county since we've been back at home.
Well, that's a great. What are you hearing from your constituents out there?
Well, people are concerned about the Iran deal and want me to vote no. They're very concerned about what Iran will do with $150 billion to export terrorism or buy ICBM technology. I'm hearing that folks do not want me to vote on Planned Parenthood. That's a topic. And yeah, people are still concerned about the refugee resettlement program, the Gitmo prisoners. We hear a lot of talk about presidential politics.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of good ones to talk about here today. But, you know, what is today? It's National VJ Day. It's the day they actually signed Japan's surrender to the Allies, and they actually signed the papers on the USS Missouri.
Well, you're celebrating, I guess. Right?
Well, no, I'm just making a point that it's kind of interesting. On September 2nd, 1945, that this is National VJ Day. And as we look at the Iran deal, I thought it was very interesting that you were going to be on. That was that day. And here we have the Iran deal coming down the pike at us. What have this Iran deal, everything that I read, it doesn't look like a good deal at all, Jeff.
No, it's a bad deal. I don't see anything good in it. And they try to make an argument, the other side, the Obama administration and others, that the Iran deal will prevent war from happening in the Middle East or globally. Well, a strong Iran just, I think, assures that there's going to be a conflict in the Middle East because you're going to have an arms race between the Arabs and the Persians. The Arabs do not trust the Iranians or the Persians. You've heard Saudi and UAE and others say they're going to build up their weaponry. They may possibly pursue nuclear ambitions just as a deterrent to Iran. You know, in its infancy, Iran immediately gets $150 billion. Now, what they do with that money is up to Iran. John Kerry says, oh, well, $100 billion of that is already accounted for. They've got to pay bills. Well, that's really up to Iran whether they pay their bills or not. If you do say they're going to take $100 billion and pay bills, that still leaves $50 billion in to buy ICBM technology, to buy weaponry, but also to continue with material support or financial support for Hamas and Hezbollah, which exports terrorism all over the world against the Jewish state of Israel and against Americans. We're dealing in an agreement here with Iran that continues to chant death to America. Really? That's who we're going to enter into an agreement? How is this a good deal?
I have no idea, and I am surprised. Every day it seems like, you know, I thought when Schumer came out against the deal that was going to be a big stopper to the Democratic Party. But it seems like every day one Democrat comes out in support, and I'm concerned that when y'all get back up there, do you think you'll have the power between the House and the Senate to keep this from going through, Jeff?
Well, here's how I see it playing out, and we have until September 17th to vote on this deal. If you assume the clock is running, I could make the argument that the clock is not running because all the requirements to start the clock running haven't been met. But the powers that be say the clock's running, so September 17th is the date. I believe we will have the votes in the House and the Senate to vote for the resolution of disapproval, so we'll disapprove the Iran deal. That will go to the president's desk. He will veto it. The veto will come back, and we'll immediately take up a veto override. I don't know that the votes are there in both chambers. It takes two-thirds to override a veto. I don't believe the votes are there at this point in time, and I think there are some Democrats who are coming out against the Iran deal because it helps them with their Jewish vote, but in the back of their minds, they know that the votes aren't there to override the president, and they want to secretly support the president on this deal. I cannot believe that their allegiance to the Obama administration is so strong that they would threaten the safety and security of our country, the United States of America, as well as our allies in the Middle East, like Israel and others.
Well, that is what concerns me. Now, what if, let's just play devil's advocate, what if it does go through, Jeff?
Well, if the deal goes through, Iran immediately gets $150 billion, as I said, to buy weaponry and export weaponry or continue to finance or materially support terrorism. They're the largest exporter of terrorism in the world. Iran is not a very good actor. And even if they adhere to every letter of the Iranian P5+1 agreement, they will have a nuclear weapon in 10 years. Now, that's assuming that they're going to be honest and adhere to every part of the agreement. I don't believe they will. They never have. So I believe they'll have this deal will allow them to have a nuclear weapon a lot sooner because of the very weak enforcement aspects of it, of inspections and side agreements with the IAEA on whether they can inspect themselves and provide data to the IAEA. It's like allowing the fox to guard the hen house.
Yes. All right. So there would be nothing else that could be done?
Not immediately. The next president could, in theory, reverse course on the Iran deal, but that's 18 months away or longer.
Yeah.
So, you know, is that going to be a possibility? What can Iran do once they get their hands on $150 billion? You're not going to get that back. And John Kerry keeps talking about snapback provision of sanctions. Well, once you release sanctions to give them access to those frozen assets, you're not going to snap back, assuming that the sanctions do snap back in place. A lot of people disagree with him on that. So it's a bad deal for America. It's a bad deal for our allies in the region. And I hope that cooler heads prevail in Washington and we do have the ability to override the veto.
Well, I figure you do in Congress. It's the Senate that's kind of iffy, though. That's where it gets kind of iffy. But let's move on, since we're talking about sanctions and everything. Of course, now we have a relationship with Cuba, and now we're talking about moving the Guantanamo Bay prisoners and returning Guantanamo Bay to Cuba. I can't believe that we're looking at all this in such a short period of time. I know one of the places that they were talking about was here in South Carolina and also in Kansas. Governor Haley and the other governor have written a letter saying not on their watch. But what do you think is going to, what's the direction we're headed on this one?
Well, not only Governor Haley, but Senator Tim Scott and myself and others have sent a letter to the president saying, do not bring those prisoners to Charleston, South Carolina, within like a half a mile of a school of children. It's a bad location, and it's the wrong thing to do to bring those prisoners to the United States. We've got a great facility at Guantanamo Bay. Here's what the president wants to do, and this president is trying to fundamentally change the United States of America. It's been his goal, and he's changing our relationships with these countries around the world. Yes. They close Guantanamo Bay, and if they renege on their lease agreement and give that lease back to Fidel Castro, then you have a deep, warm-water port that Cuba, who is ideologically aligned with Russia, will possibly lease to the Russians or the Chinese, who will have access to a deep, warm-water port 90 miles from the United States in the Western Hemisphere. And that's a bad thing, and we cannot allow that to happen.
Well, you know, the president seems to keep doing things, though, Jeff.
He does. And we keep trying to stop him. And that's where our leadership needs to be a little bit stronger on this whole Cuba deal in Guantanamo Bay, because I can almost guarantee that Fidel Castro will turn that Guantanamo base in a lease aspect to the Russians. He's already given them a military base in Cuba. They've opened up another intelligence gathering listening base in Cuba. what the Russians are, where they can listen and surveil the United States of America. And why we would allow them to have access to Guantanamo Bay is beyond me. So I'm going to fight my administration on that every way I can.
Well, I certainly am glad to hear that. But like I said, it just seems the president just seems to use that executive order and that pen of his. Which brings me to my next topic is you recently put out an article about the RAINS Act and how can that help fix things?
Yeah, I mean, the RAINS Act is an ability to roll back regulations that are so bad, such as the EPA regulations on waters of the U.S. and other job-killing regulations that the administration has put forward. The RAINS Act is something that I know all Republicans in the House supported. I'm not sure what the votes were in the Senate. Something Tim helped work on when he was in the House of Representatives, not just over in the Senate.
But is this going anywhere, the RAINS Act? Are you going to be able to do anything on it?
I'm not sure. I'm not privy to where it is. I know we passed it out of Congress, and I'm not sure what that means for what the president's going to do or not do and what it means for the agencies that it affects.
Okay. All right. Well, I was just thinking that does that have any effect on being able to rein this president in, Jeff?
Well, we've been ineffective at reining this president in for 6 years, 6.5 years now. So I don't hold out hope that the leadership in the House and Senate will actually continue working any harder than they have to rein in the president. I'm frustrated just like every other American because we see government growing exponentially. We see less personal freedom, less ability to create jobs, less ability to keep our hard-earned money, more money being taken in taxes, more money being taken from what's left over because we see rising commodity prices. You know, the only benefit right now is we've seen transportation fuel prices go down, something I've worked on for 4.5 years now, and I'm not taking credit for it, but something that I know is a good thing is having less transportation fuel prices. That should trickle down to commodity prices because transportation fuel factors into, you know, what the cost of a commodity is on the grocer shelves. But we haven't seen that. We haven't seen that because the producers are still having to pay super high electricity rates. And everybody in South Carolina has experienced that because our electricity rates have gone up. Why have they gone up? They've gone up because we have seen this whole green initiative and climate change initiative drive coal-fired power plants out of existence, create more need for lessening your carbon footprint with more expensive electricity costs. And all that trickles down to mom and dad who are trying to pay their electricity bill. They're seeing higher utility rates. And it's all because of the policies of the Obama administration.
That's right. And now he's in Alaska and looks, he's changing the name of Mount McKinley. You know, from a cost factor, Jeff, just take away whether it's the right thing to do or not. But from a cost factor, isn't that prohibitive, just the cost of changing the name of a mountain?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of cost factors in that with just stationary and signage and all that for the National Park Service. But the Obama administration has never factored the cost of anything into their decision-making because they think that the money's going to continue to roll in. We continue to have deficit spending. We still have over $18 trillion in debt. And when we continue spending like there's a money tree in the backyard, you're going to see costs never factor into the decision-making process. It's crazy. Businesses don't operate that. I've got an attorney firm that just brought in my district. They just brought in a young attorney. They're probably going to make him a partner, but they're not going to make him a partner yet because of the cost factor of just changing stationery to add somebody else's name on the partnership, just changing all the business cards, the signage, the website, everything else. There's a cost factor. So they're going to wait until they have to reorder stationery and that sort of thing before they truly make him a partner. That's what business does. They factor in the cost of their decisions into the decision-making process. The Obama administration doesn't.
Jeff, what is it going to take? What is it going to take for cost for it to be run like a business? You know, we've seen We've seen Donald Trump really strike a nerve out there with people. We've seen Carson come way up in the polls, and Carly Fiorini. What are you thinking as you look at the polls, particularly on the Republican side, what the public is saying about Washington and our Congress and Senate and the whole running of our government?
Well, America's frustrated watching career politicians who never created a job or signed the front of a paycheck continue to try to operate government. They've never operated a business, so why are we putting faith in them to be able to operate government? I think they're tired of the establishment that has continued to govern the same old way and getting the same results, although they expect different results, are getting the same results, and they look around wondering why. That's why you see outsiders like Donald Trump, Carly Fiorina, and Ben Carson, and even perceived outsiders like Ted Cruz, really rise in the polls within the Republican primary. America wants something different. They took a chance on an untrained, unskilled, unproven United States senator who has never done anything but community organized, never created a single job. They took a chance on him, and what he's done is lessen their personal liberty, increase their taxes, continue to with policies that do not create jobs in this country. We still have high unemployment and very high or low labor participation rates, high percentages, low number of people participating in the labor force, able-bodied Americans. And so they took a chance on that, and they see what it's gotten them. Now they want to take a chance, I think, on somebody that is proven, is skilled, and does have the ability to turn this country around. And that's why I think you're seeing the paradigm shift in Republican politics.
What do you feel futuristically that this non-politicals will be able to stand through the election, through going through the nomination process? Do you think they're going to be able to stay there?
We'll see. You know, campaigns are a long marathon. They're not a sprint. And so you historically see candidates rise in the polls and fall in the polls. We'll see if the ones that are at the top now have the longevity and the ability to actually make it through Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and then through Super Tuesday. It's going to be an interesting cycle, and I'm like every other American. My mind isn't made up. I'm still watching and learning about the candidates, and look forward to the next debate. And I hate to do it, but Senator Scott has a field hearing at Clemson today, and I'm participating. It's dealing with biomedical issues in an aging population in South Carolina. And as you know, my father passed away with Alzheimer's back on April 14th, and today would have been his 78th birthday. So it's a special day for me in a lot of ways to honor my father here at Clemson at Senator Scott's field hearing, and I am going to have to run to go participate at that.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to getting you in studio so we can really sit down and talk about all this.
Would love to. We got a lot going on, and it's going to be an interesting fall with debt ceilings and CRs and Iran and Planned Parenthood and just so many other things. So I'd love to try to work that out, Ann.
All right. Thank you so much, Congressman Jeff Duncan. God bless.
God bless you. Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye.